Never before has it been realized that the immune system has such power. It protects us. I call it the biological soul, and that I got from my wife. But it is the biological soul. It interacts and integrates itself with the brain, the blood vasculature, the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, the heart. Almost every organ, including the skin, is important.
In this episode, we're talking to Dr. Robert Lajita, also known as Dr. Bob. He's the director of the Institute of Autoimmune and Rheumatic Disease at St. Joseph Hospital in Newark, New Jersey. We will be talking about all things immunity, including vaccines. Dr. Bob and I are talking about things in general, and it's important to point out that you need to discuss with your own healthcare team regarding your very specific healthcare circumstances to determine what's right for you. So let's get started. Welcome everyone to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, oh my goodness, it's my honor and privilege to be with you again. We're going into the fall season, and I don't know about you, but this pandemic thing is just getting old. I'm so done with it. And that's our guest, Dr. Robert Lajita. And he'll be joining us in just a couple of seconds because I want to have all the time possible with him because we're going to talk. It's not specifically autoimmune, guys, but I think it's so important because we're going to be talking about keeping our kids safe and our kids and our immune system strong as the kids return to school and also as we enter into what's normally called cold and flu season. So welcome, Dr. Bob. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Sharon. A great privilege.
Oh my goodness. And so congratulations on your new book, Immunity Strong, coming out in October. I'm so excited to read it.
Thank you. I'm so excited because it's the first lay book that I have written. I've written books for patients, one or two, lupus Q&A, and a few others like the rheumatoid arthritis solution, but I've never had a book that would be for a general audience. And of course, my textbooks, you all know, systemic lupus erythematosus and autoimmune diseases and all that. Those are all technical and mostly for physicians and libraries. But this book, Immunity Strong, is really written for the layperson. We've gone through it with great detail in trying to make it simple. I really enjoyed writing it. I had a developmental editor that helped me tell me when I was too complicated and that no one would understand what I was saying. And I changed everything and, of course, enlarged on topics. And it's a fun book.
And it's so necessary right now for all of us to understand the truth about our immune system. So we'll talk about our immune system in just a minute. But one of the topics I want to focus on right now is because here it is, the first back to school week for most people. I know, goodness, this is a big step for kids and parents, both for our immune systems and our anxiety systems. So talk about some of the ways that we can make sure that we, as parents and kids, boost our immune system going into the typical cold and flu season.
As you know, the vaccine is not approved for children below the age of 12. And this is where the anxiety comes in. For those between the age of 12 and 18, it's not an issue because the vaccines are available. The question is, these children, the ones between 12 and 18, need parental permission to get immunized. And there are anti-vaxxers that are parents. They're certainly not going to agree to have their children immunized, even though the vaccines, and I have to say this, are perfectly safe. Both the messenger RNA and the J&J vaccine are very, very safe. And only, however, and you know, I wrote a piece on vaccine hesitancy. Let's talk about just for a moment the adults who really run the children's lives. The vaccine hesitancy is, of course, confidence in the vaccine's efficacy. Secondly, complacency, saying, well, it doesn't work. You know, there's no FDA approval. And the third is convenience. Well, the FDA approval came for the Pfizer vaccine, which did get a lot of the on the fence, hesitant people vaccinated. But we still have roughly 47% of the American population that will not be vaccinated. And this is a problem. So now, fast forward to the school systems. About for the last 6 months, I have been talking on various TV networks, cable and otherwise, about the fact that teachers and ancillary people in school systems need to be vaccinated. Then a monkey wrench was thrown into things when we found out that if you were vaccinated, you still could carry the virus. Even though you would not get sick, you still could carry the virus. very much like the below age 12 group, children can carry the virus and not get sick, with few exceptions. Of course, the multi-system inflammatory disease syndrome, which is very, very severe and reminds me of Kawasaki disease. But Kawasaki's is a form of vasculitis or inflammation of blood vessels in the heart in young children. It's totally treatable and reversible. And these children with severe COVID MICS, multi-system inflammatory syndrome S children, they get very, very, very sick. And all of the hospital pediatric programs, and I'm not a pediatrician, have seen a few cases of the MICS children. So that's alarming to a parent. Now, there are no vaccines for the 12 and below group. And the teachers in the schools are saying, wow, these kids can carry the virus even though they're not sick. So can they or should they wear masks? And as you know, that's a big conundrum for everybody, teachers as well as parents. How do you keep a mask on a five-year-old or a six-year-old or even a seven-year-old? It's almost impossible. Do you socially distance them? That's also impossible. Children like to gather together. They play together. They scream and yell. They sneeze. They do their thing. So it is a bit of a conundrum, but I am pretty sure that youngsters below the age of 12 very rarely get infected from each other. If anything, they're going to be infected from an adult or from a sibling who's in the teen years, perhaps. So that is something that we're just going to have to bear going forward, because I am told by Moderna and Pfizer that the vaccine for the 12 and below group is not going to be ready until December or January of next year. So that will be okay. But then we think of the parents who are not vaccinated, who are saying, if I don't get the vaccine, I'm not going to have my child vaccinated. And that produces another issue. So there's a lot of confusion. And the confusion actually is promulgated by the government. My latest thing, which I would like to do this week, actually, is talk on national television about the fact that we need a common spokesperson to take the WHO, the FDA, the CDC, and all the other pundits that we have in our government giving us advice, to consolidate and distill it into one person's advice for the nation. Because you hear constantly, my patients as well, saying, I'm so confused. I hear this from the CDC, this from the FDA, this from the WHO. And in certain instances, they don't agree with each other. So it becomes a major problem. The problem is one of communication. The latest problem is confidence and complacency. And so now we are told that those of us who are vaccinated can also get the infection. And if that's the case, and we can get the infection and be asymptomatic, so we don't know whether we are in fact carrying the virus, or if you do get it, you may have symptoms of sinusitis or a cold, maybe a slight fever and some aches. So that becomes a real issue. The issue there is complacency among the people who are not vaccinated, saying, well, why should I get the vaccination if I'm going to get infected anyhow? Well, infection and actual extent of disease, ICU care, death and destruction do not occur for all intents in 99.5% of people who are vaccinated. So that should not be a deterrent to getting the vaccine. And I just want to say that because I hear that all the time. And those who are unvaccinated, they make up the majority of people in the intensive care units and the people that are intubated and go on to die.
I wanted to circle back a little bit just quickly on a couple of things. When you were mentioning the under 12 could be asymptomatic and then down the line come up with the inflammatory condition, which sometimes can come across as quite a surprise to parents because they'll say, I didn't even know my child, they just had a runny nose or, a two-day fever. They didn't have COVID. So let's talk a little bit about what are some of the things a parent should watch for? Because when I was reading that about, wow, you could be a couple of weeks down the line and all of a sudden you're surprised that this even happened.
Yes. Well, kids get colds, which is another family of coronavirus. Kids get allergic reactions. Children get all sorts of things like influenza even. The parent should be aware of the fact that if your child has a fever, has aches and pains, and it's hard to tell with a child of a certain young age, but they lose their smell and taste, you're pretty sure that the child probably should be tested for COVID-19. That's what I would suggest and prescribe. The vast majority of children are not going to get COVID. And if they did, they would recover quickly. The conundrum or problem we have right now is they're all going to go to school and they're going to be in school spreading it from one to another if the child is sick. So if your child is sick in any way, shape, or form, keep him or her home. Don't let them go to school until they're tested by their pediatrician and shown to be negative.
Now, a quick question. I have been reading that the Delta variant is, children are picking that up more often. What are the numbers on that? Should I, as a parent, be concerned that the Delta variant is, in my reading, more contagious?
It is more contagious to everybody, not just children, to adults as well. It's 6 times more transmissible, which means that it is very, very easy to get. Only after 5 to 10 seconds of exposure, you can be infected. So the problem with the Delta variant is exactly that. It tends to cause a more severe disease. It's also easily transmissible, but it is readily treated. So I don't think people should lose sleep if they get the Delta variant. If you have a comorbidity, and many children do, such as asthma, diabetes, other lung problems, breathing difficulty, then you need to be especially careful with your child. If you are an adult that have all those things, that is, of course, a big concern. And so we're advocating that people that have these comorbidities now, and this is a very uneven response from the government, that they get the booster shot, which is the third shot. I'm not sure that there is unanimity of agreement among the CDC, the FDA, the WHO on whether a booster is needed. We've been told that everybody that's got comorbidities now should and can get a booster shot, particularly the Pfizer vaccine. However, the government is saying September 20th is the point at which the general population can and should get the booster shot. But then I'm hearing stories about, well, maybe we're not so sure. The WHO, World Health Organization, is saying, no, the booster shot's not necessary because more than half of the planet is not even vaccinated yet with a first shot. So that's where we are. And that's what I mean by all the confusion. There has to be a clearinghouse with one individual representing the federal government who says, yes, a booster shot is good, or no, a booster shot is not good. And then Dr. Fauci, who I admire, is not the person to do that because he has, there is such a divide in the public about conservatives versus liberals. And you know that story, who's wearing a mask, who's not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nutty, actually, and very silly, because this should not be politicized. And that's another point I wanted to make. Public health should not be politicized at all. I don't care if you're a conservative or liberal. When you're in the ICU on a ventilator, we don't ask what your political party is.
Unfortunately, it has been politicized. Now, a couple of other things I wanted to talk about is, I've been reading about the vaccinations and autoimmune conditions, and that people are not as getting a strong as response. And so there, when we were talking about boosters and things, what are some other things that we can do to boost our own immunity if we have an autoimmune condition?
Well, in my book, I talk about that. There are many things you can take to boost your immune system. And many of them are alternative medicines, such as herbs, you know, like echinacea, et cetera. Echinacea, turmeric, which a lot of my patients are on, coenzyme Q. I could go on and on. There's a whole section in the book on this. And I'm an Orthodox doctor, so I say this because I know so many patients are out there saying, I can take magnesium and I can take this and that and be sure that my immune system is prime. Vitamin D is another one. So I think being in good health, taking a multivitamin, I don't advocate some of the weird medications that people are taking as a preventative. And you know what they are, and I can mention it if you want. But I don't advocate people go out and do that. We're a lot farther ahead of knowing how to treat this condition than we were, say, a year ago. There are monoclonal antibodies, which we use in the emergency room. There are steroids like dexamethasone, anticoagulants to keep your blood thin, all of this stuff. And a baby aspirin, by the way, I always advise every of my patients to take a baby aspirin, regardless of whether you have COVID or not, just to protect you from stroke and heart disease. Baby aspirins have been shown many, many times daily to protect an individual from vasculopathy. So those are the things that I would suggest. Does that answer your question more or less?
Absolutely, because I know when we have an autoimmune condition, we're at more at risk. And I was just curious what other things we could do that were easy to do. Like, I think vitamin D is pretty easy to do.
Yep, vitamin D is easy to do. The vast majority of people, and this depends on your immunogenetics, the vast majority of people are really get mild disease. They don't wind up in the emergency room and in the hospital. Thank God for that. And as you know, Sharon, there's all this, and I'm always asked this, people are talking about neutralizing antibody going down after 8 months. That may be the case, but that's only one part of the adaptive immune system. This is in my book, by the way. And that's why it explains a lot. There's cellular immunity, T, B cells, interferon production, natural killer cells, all sorts of things that we have in our bodies that are genetically driven, but are very, very potent antiviral substances. And it's those people who have genetic, immunogenetic defects or have some glitch in their immune system, which doesn't become obvious until they get infected. We've all heard about the tennis star who's 25 years old in great shape, runs 5 miles a day and so on, gets COVID and dies within a week. That is immunogenetics. That is clearly not something one would expect from an 85-year-old lady with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease who gets COVID and dies. Those are patients with comorbidities. There are people out there that have no comorbidities who are at risk of getting this infection and succumbing to it. And that has always been a fascinating but terribly tragic aspect of this disease.
Absolutely. And we need to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Bob some more just about staying strong and healthy during as we're changing seasons as well. This has been fascinating. Thank you, Dr. Bob. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free, non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I am here with Dr. Robert Lahita, and he is also known as Dr. Bob. He is the author of many books, and his new book, Immunity Strong, is coming out in October. I can't wait to read it. And he's the director of the Institute of Autoimmune and Rheumatic Disease at St. Joseph Hospital in New Jersey. And we've been talking about COVID, of course, and back to school and kids and COVID. I wanted to talk to you a little bit along the topic, though, about keeping our immune system strong, besides all about COVID. We're entering into a traditional cold and flu season. Now, the interesting thing about last year, if I read the studies correctly, it was not a very bad cold and flu season last year.
It was not at all. Nobody got colds, or very few people got colds, because we were washing our hands, we were wearing masks, and we were socially distancing. And God knows, if you were in a place like a bar and somebody sneezed, the whole place would clear out. No one stayed behind. It was a good way to get rid of people without yelling fire, which would also eliminate a lot of people. So the thing is that we weren't in closed spaces for all intents and purposes. And I've often said that now with the cold weather coming in parts of our country, we're going to be keeping warm in closed spaces. And now a lot of people are not wearing masks. And I understand that everybody's mask exhausted. So they will be in close quarters with each other. And the presumption is that everybody's been vaccinated, but you don't know. Some people are on the honor system. Many people are too embarrassed to talk about vaccination. And I, for one, am against having a passport to get into movie theaters or Broadway shows or dining in restaurants. You know, it's kind of an infringement of freedom. On the other hand, we want people to have common sense and say, if I'm not vaccinated, wear a mask for God's sakes inside. If you are vaccinated, I would advise you to wear a mask, but I know that most people that are vaccinated are saying, what was the point of my getting vaccinated if I have to go back to wearing a mask and being careful? That kind of guidance should come from the federal government. They should have advice from the CDC and the FDA on mask wearing. And you know, Sharon, that there are certain states who prohibit mask wearing, which is very interesting. And you can actually be arrested for wearing a mask or encouraging people to wear a mask. But I think the schools are a different story. I think colleges and universities are a different story. And I think if you're in the food service industry and you're serving people, waiters, cooks, chefs, you should wear a mask if you have not been vaccinated, but also if you have been vaccinated, just to prevent the spread of the virus. That's common sense. Until we're at it, we're in the clear. And we're never going to achieve herd immunity, which you've heard about. 75 to 80% of the people, either infected or vaccinated, will then prevent the promulgation of COVID. Because, and this is a big one that I try to explain to everybody, the more people that are unvaccinated, the more opportunity this virus has to mutate. And the reason we have variants is because of people who are not vaccinated. Simple as that.
Now, since we are getting a lot of mutations and things like that, can you explain the difference between what's known as pandemic versus endemic? We're hearing a lot about that word, where people, you're just going to have to get used to it.
Yes. Actually, I talk about this all the time. The pandemic was everybody's, you know, running around trying to prevent themselves. We're trying to mitigate or suppress the ongoing infections with the virus internationally, every country in the world. I never thought I would see that in my lifetime, but it happened. Every country in the world has had infections of COVID. The vast majority of these countries have less than 5% of their populations immunized, if at all, because they can't get the vaccine. So that is the pandemic, and that is going to be resolved. And I'm very proud of our government having given, I think it was 116 million doses of free vaccine to over 65 countries, with the European Union, with the more the wealthier countries around the world donating vaccines to COVAX, which is the international effort to provide vaccines to Indonesia, to Africa, to the Middle East. God knows they need it, because if you get sick there, the medical talent, while it's great, but the medical resources are quite limited. So people often die because they can't find a bed or they can't find a good hospital or indeed good doctors and nurses. So that's that. And then I said, well, this coronavirus is not going anywhere. It is not like smallpox, which has been overcome. It's not like polio, which for the most part has been overcome, but we still have pockets of polio around the world, believe it or not. But it is going to be endemic. And that means it's going to be part of our fabric of infection forever. The coronavirus may, like the influenza virus, require an annual injection, an annual immunization. And with that, I would say the more people that we have vaccinated, the less infection we're going to see. So then it will truly become endemic. It'll be like the flu. We'll know, you know, Mrs. Jones down the street got infected and she has COVID. Three streets down, Mr. Smith got COVID and he's infected. But not everybody has to worry. The schools won't have to worry. It'll be a rarity, but it will be endemic. And we may have to combine the COVID vaccine boosters every year with the influenza vaccine, which, as you know, is only 40% effective. That's influenza. We all get shots. In fact, I'm ready to get my flu shot for this year. It's tough for us to really differentiate in the emergency room between COVID and influenza. We're getting pretty good at it now, and we have a rapid test for the flu. We already have a rapid test for COVID. Some of them, I'm told, are not as good as I'd like them to be, but nevertheless, that's the job of the emergency room physician before a patient gets admitted who is very, very sick or sent home. So they have to determine, do they have the flu? Does the patient have COVID or influenza, or is it just allergies, or do they have something else? And so that's where we are, Sharon.
I was hearing on the news about the rapid test and testing for school-aged children. And there was a lot of comments there about, well, first off, that it, you know, you have to be wary of false negative, false positives, positive. Yes. And I'm like, okay. But then they were saying when you actually test is more important. People say, oh, test them every Monday or whatever. But the newscaster was saying, no, that you have to test them when there's symptoms. So let's talk about this rapid test and sort of arbitrary testing.
Yes. Well, if you've been in contact with someone who has gotten sick from COVID, you should be tested. Now, these three tests are very interesting. The first test that is not widely available, but it is something that's cumbersome, and that's the polymerase chain reaction. That's the probe that goes up your nose into the nasopharynx and wrapped around. We've all had that done, some of us, many, many times. The second test is the antigen test, which is the rapid test, which is done like the influenza test. And that's an enzyme immunoassay based on the COVID antigens. The third test is the neutralizing antibody test. That's looking at proteins that are directed against COVID. And many of my patients get those just to show that they're immune. Now, a lot of patients that have been vaccinated don't have antibody that's neutralizing. And so people get all bent out of shape. Oh my gosh, I got the vaccine and I have no antibody. That simply is not necessarily the case because you still have cellular immunity. You still have, for want, in the book, it's very clear, and I can't make it clear within 3 seconds, but it's talking about the different cell populations that had been alerted to the fact that you have had COVID, but you haven't, you've got the vaccine. But for all intents, the immune system says, oh, they've had COVID. So they mount a response when you get an infection. And I use an analogy in my book, Immunity Strong, which is very, very easy to understand. I compare the immune system to the New York City Police Department.
Okay. Do we want to go there, Dr. Bob? But go ahead.
It's very educational because all of us know what police do. We all know how, there's a be on the lookout. We know how radio transmission occurs. We know how communication, our immune systems are far more sophisticated than a large metropolis's protection units, which is the police department. We have within our bodies specialty units. We even have a TSA. We have border patrols and precincts, our lymph nodes, the thymus gland, the city hall of the immune system. We have our spleen, which is the local prison. All of these things, these analogies help people to understand how the immune system works. And so they shouldn't be upset when a doctor says, well, you don't have any neutralizing antibody, you better get another shot. That is not necessarily needed or the case for that matter.
My goodness. Well, that brings up this question then of, it's sort of circling back in a bit, but if that's the case, how will we know when it's time for that booster? I mean, in us versus somebody else.
The booster, based on Israeli data, Pfizer looked at, I think it was 8,000 people that were infected out of several tens of millions of people and decided that they didn't have any neutralizing antibody, which is, again, only one aspect of adaptive immunity. And so they decided to give them the booster, which is fine. The booster can't hurt you, but the booster can only enhance the protection. The question is if the booster is going to be expensive and people are going to have to pull money out of their pockets to be immunized for the third time. And thereupon is your last question, which is the virus going to be endemic? And my answer is yes, most likely. And we're going to have to get a booster anyhow. I don't know if we need it in 8 months or in a year or 2 years, but we will probably need to have a booster shot to protect us against variants. Now, again, if we had enough people immunized, we wouldn't need to talk about variants because, you know, viruses upregulate and downregulate. You don't hear about the ones that downregulate and disappear, but we do hear the ones that upregulate, like the Delta and now the Mu virus and the Lambda strain, and all of these strains that I have been looking at that are probably analogous to the Delta virus, the Delta variant. We have no idea, for example, about the Mu variant, which has been around in South America since January, but hasn't caused major disruption here in the United States. Also, the Lambda variant out of Peru, that is another one. We have no idea of its infectivity. We don't suspect it's anything like the Delta variant, which came from India, where there was enough population to cause this virus to really upregulate in a big way. And it became very infective and highly transmissible. So I hope that explains it a little bit clearer. The antibody response is not necessarily what we want to know if you're not vaccinated. We want to know if you have the virus. So that's looking at antigen, which is the covering of the virus itself, and polymerase chain reaction, which actually takes nasal swab and goes back in your nasopharynx and actually tests for the presence of the virus itself, not the immune system's response, but the actual virus.
Okay. Wow.
Is that clear?
Yeah, that's clear. Although it just makes you wonder, like, is this ever going to end? I feel like Groundhog Day, the movie Groundhog Day.
You should do all over again. You quote Casey Stengel.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, we only have about 15, 16 minutes left. But one of the things I do want to talk about are other things. Let's put COVID to bed for just a little bit and talk about keeping our immune system strong during flu season and cold season, besides getting the flu vaccine. What other things in your book do you talk about? Are there certain foods that boost immunity?
Yes, I talk about all of that. The best thing to do is have a wonderful diet. I also recommend a multivitamin, particularly for people who are over the age of 60, because we know that they are extremely susceptible. There's such a thing called immunosenescence, and I talk about that in the book. I have a whole section on the aging immune system. I talk about athletics. I talk about sexual relations, all of these things enhancing immune function. And that is basically true. And it's really remarkable how people don't realize that the very activity that they have, the mind, body, soul, yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, all of these ancient practices that enhance the immune system. A good joke is enough to enhance immune function, believe it or not. There's an extreme effect that immunity has on the brain and that the brain also has on the immune system. It is really the conductor of the immune system in a big way. So I think that other things, nutrients that you can take, such as we've already mentioned vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin C, certainly. These are all encompassed in a multivitamin that a person should take religiously on a daily basis. And even though I am an Orthodox physician who for years have been saying, well, vitamins don't really matter, I think for immune resistance, a good nutrition, a good diet, and good vitamins matter a lot. Because we're seeing in the third world countries where, you know, people are starving and they succumb to not just immune diseases, but malaria and other kinds of parasitic infections because they simply don't have a host resistance. Now, in the book, I think one of the more fascinating things about immunity is stress. Stress, like divorce, like taking an exam, like moving from one home to another, like having your house ravaged by a flood, like having power outages that last several weeks because of a hurricane, all these things lower host resistance. They do that through a tremendous effect that the brain has, behavior has, on immune function. And that's not magic anymore. We actually have data for this. I mean, we used to talk about it in the old days and people would laugh and say, oh, come on, you know, that's really not important. Well, it is important. And it is truly important, as I hear from my spiritual friends, to meditate, to do yoga, and to practice those functions that make us healthy and make us have a mindset that affects the mind, body, and we call it the soul. These are the transcendental meditation people. And there's data now to show that these kinds of practices actually do good things for immune resistance and immune function.
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to comment on the idea of stress and or trauma.
Yes.
Once I understood that part of it, I was amazed at how fast my autoimmune condition began to transform. I was doing all the appropriate things and still, I was getting better, but slowly. And once I started to pay attention to my sleep, pay attention to my stress level, I started some laughter yoga, which I thought was great.
And you're hitting it right on the head here. Sleep was something I forgot to talk about, but a good night's sleep is exceedingly important, exceedingly important.
And how are people dealing with it? I mean, with this sort of feeling of deja vu all over again and the anxiety of the new variants and just, we'll say, the politicization. Are you finding a lot of people are coming, doctor, you know, I'm trying really hard, but the anxiety is there?
Yes, I do have those patients and I hear from everybody all the time. And, you know, I have a whole section in the book on chronic fatigue syndrome and also on fibromyalgia, which, as you know, if you're an autoimmune sufferer, I would say 60% of my patients with autoimmune diseases have fibromyalgia or pain syndromes, which are separate from their actual immunologic disease. The connections we haven't made yet, although I suppose in the book I talk about the immune system within the brain, the microglia, the astrocytes, the secretion of communication molecules like cytokines and chemokines in the brain, and how that most likely affects the pain that you have peripherally. And that is so debilitating to millions of people, millions, tens of millions, probably. Most of them, surprisingly, women, because the immune system of a woman is so sophisticated when you compare it to a man. It is so different. And as you know, with COVID, men were succumbing to the infections much easier and much more frequently than women were. And that was at the early part of the pandemic. I was getting calls from all over the place from doctor colleagues saying, why is this? Maybe we should treat men with estrogen. I said, yeah, that'll go over big. But you know, these are the mysteries of the immune system, the mysteries of the whole infection. And one thing the COVID has done is brought the immune system to the fore and made people really think about their health and their well-being and the fact that they're living well or not living well. You know, you're examining your own lifestyle now.
I think it's a great thing. One of the ways I like to do is make meaning of things. And even the meaning of my diagnosis was to start the show 7 years ago.
Yes, good idea.
But the interesting thing that I'm curious about now with autoimmune and what they're calling long haul COVID. Now, I'm not a doctor like you, but I just read about some of the symptoms and I go, there sounds like a strong correlation to autoimmune conditions.
Exactly. Well, you know, when you do get COVID, there's a lot of autoimmunity that pops up. I'm seeing new onset diabetes. Now I'm talking young people between, let's say, between 20 and 30 years of age, new muscle problems, you know, myositis, new cardiac disease, myocarditis in many cases, or pericarditis, which is very curable. It all is. I'm seeing new muscle weakness. I have youngsters, 25, 22-year-olds who can't walk post-COVID. They can't think straight. They can't balance their checkbook. They cannot read a book and concentrate and remember stuff. It's just extraordinary. And that's the long haul syndrome. It really is a mystery. And I don't know why this occurs. I have some ideas, but we're seeing positive anti-nuclear antibodies. That's the first indication of some autoimmunity, although autoimmunity, I should say, is natural in most of the population, particularly when you're pregnant as a female. But we're seeing it in people like young men who would ordinarily not have anti-nuclear antibody at a young age. We're seeing antibodies to other cell markers that are new to people that never were there before. We're seeing joint pain, the muscle aches. We're seeing people who have what looks like rheumatoid arthritis for the first time in their lives. And these are otherwise healthy individuals. So these are definitely clues to the etiopathogenesis of some of our most common diseases, like multiple sclerosis, diabetes, lupus erythematosus, Sjögren's syndrome, polymyositis. I could go on and on. All of the characteristics that we're seeing in our patients.
And although it's bizarre, and I know my audience is aware of how I feel about this, but trying to make meaning out of things, I am hoping that this whole, whatever we've been through, brings about a new focus on the magic of our immune system and health, and helps people that have autoimmune that for far too long have been sort of poo-pooed by a lot of medical professionals, like it's in your head, like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue still are.
And they're real. They're real diseases.
They are.
I tell our young doctors, I would say young doctors growing up, but, you know, entering their residencies, even medical school. I have given lectures in the students of the medical school and want to convince them, and my book talks about this, I want to convince them that these syndromes are real. And I give some hypotheses about how these syndromes may arise. And one of them is cytokines in the brain. You know, COVID is roughly 1,000 times more concentrated in the neural tissue of the brain than it is in the rest of the body. And that has a lot to do with the pain syndromes and also the temporary dementia, we hope temporary, of the long haul syndrome that these young people have. And to me, scientifically, it's an amazing thing. It's a fascinating thing. It's also a tragic thing. And I have been studying disease for greater than 50 years, and I'm always, always amazed at the new things I see, almost monthly.
Wow. It is surprising when I'm reading about long haul. In fact, I did have COVID. I was an early adopter. I have to say, did go through some long haul symptoms and feeling now that I'm coming out the other side. So I hold a lot of hope personally that this is temporary for people. I really hope that's the truth.
I'm sure it will be cleared. And I think it will be temporary for most.
Yeah. And then so that's great. So we're down just to the last 5 minutes, Dr. Bob. What final tips and thoughts would you like people to take away from our time together today?
Well, I want people to take away the fact that the immune system is an extraordinary system in the body. Never before has it been realized that the immune system has such power. It protects us. I call it the biological soul. And that I got from my wife, actually. She's an artist. But it is the biological soul. It interacts and integrates itself with the brain, the blood vasculature, the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, the heart. Almost every organ, including the skin, is important. Oh, I should have mentioned the biomes. The microbiomes are really important in the bowel, on the skin, in the lung, in the various organs. These microbiomes, you know, with probiotics and prebiotics, are really important and inform the adaptive immune system as to how healthy you should be or how healthy you will become. So that's important. And that's in the book as well. The biomes are critical. Your immune system is an extremely efficient and very well-regarded organ that protects you from top to bottom, from actually from birth or even before birth when you're a neonate, from birth to death. Your immune system is your biological soul. And that's what the book Immunity Strong really tries to present to the public.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Tell everyone where they can find the book when it comes out, and it's available for pre-order.
You can pre-order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I don't know where it's going to be, but presumably it'll be all over the place once it comes out. It is a book for the lay public. I use very simple language to explain very complicated topics.
And what a timely book it is. Thank you, Dr. Bob, for all the work you do. And thank you for all your patience there letting us have this time to chat and spread the word about wellness and well-being and our immune system. Everyone, Dr. Robert Lahita, and he's the director of the Institute of Autoimmune and Rheumatic Disease at St. Joseph Health in New Jersey. And his new book, Immunity Strong, will be out soon. So everyone go and get a copy of it because it's certainly a needed book right now. Everyone have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.